This podcast is brought to you by DKP & Co. Chartered Accountants.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
This is Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and right around the world. And I'm your host, Louise Taffer. And it's our first birthday. A big happy birthday to FNR. And thank you to all of our listeners and sponsors for a very successful year. And joining me in the studio is Josh Parrish. Josh, it's great to have you.
Yes, happy birthday, Louise.
Happy birthday to you too.
We're not going to sing, listeners, so don't worry about that. But we do have a huge show coming up for you tonight. Dominic Bossi from the Sydney Morning Herald is going to join us very shortly to discuss the FFA Cup semi-final over the weekend between the two Sydney arch rivals and how they're shaping up ahead of the new season. And we're also going to get his thoughts on the Congress situation and how that might impact upon A-League expansion, which is something he's written about today.
Yeah, looking forward to chatting to Dom Bossi. And who else do we have, Josh? I believe there's a whole host of guests.
Absolutely. We've got a stacked show. We're going to talk W League with Bobby Despotovsky, obviously an NSL legend in his own right, but now the coach of the Perth Glory women's team. And he has the first ever female marquee player in his squad, of course, Sam Kerr, turning down some high-profile European offers to come back to the Glory. So that must be a huge boost for the club, and we're going to ask him about how he's preparing for the new W League season. Also, in community news, we're going to talk to Mark Tyrell from Knox City Football Club, one of the organisers of the All Nations Cup, which has been going for a number of years now and celebrates the multiculturalism and diversity in that region of Melbourne. It's a fantastic competition with 16 teams from different countries competing. So really looking forward to hearing from Mark Tyrell. And then in the second hour, as we always do on a Tuesday, we're going to go over to Damien Davies and get an Aussies Abroad update. A lot of Socceroos and fringe Socceroos getting minutes over the weekend and a few getting some goals as well. So looking forward to hearing from Damien.
Yes, likewise. And making headlines across Australia, there's plenty of news to get through. Before we get to those guests, FFA have advised that Huddersfield Town's Aaron Moy won't feature in the Socceroos squad for this week's training camp in the UAE or next week's international friendly against Kuwait after Moy suffered a groin strain in Huddersfield's 1-1 draw with Burnley in the EPL at the weekend. Moy underwent scans in the United Kingdom on Monday, and it's been decided that he, like Matty Ryan, should remain in England rather than travel to the Middle East. Uncapped Barnsley midfielder Kenneth Dougal will be Moy's replacement. In the A-League, Melbourne City have confirmed Scottish import Michael O'Halloran has sustained a hamstring injury that rules the winger out for 8 to 12 weeks. The injury occurred during a pre-season friendly against Brisbane Roar and means O'Halloran will miss City's first few games of the A-League season. In Europe, the Matildas prepare to face world number 3 England tomorrow morning at Craven Cottage. Matildas assistant coach Gary Van Egmond looked ahead to their upcoming match.
Yeah, good. We've obviously just played France and we're recovering from that and the travel, but we're looking forward to playing England, another team in the top 4, top 5. So it'll be another really, really good test. But the girls are preparing well, they've recovered well, and we've done our homework on England, so hopefully have a good game. Oh, look, we're not going to put any expectations on ourselves. The one thing we want to make sure is that we're well organised and we understand what England are doing, and we've prepared well to obviously analyse what England do. And then it's about looking to see how we can implement that and to see how we can actually control the game with the ball. We really didn't really control the game against France as far as the ball was concerned. France were better in that department, and we like to see how we can control games more with the ball. So that's a real task for us against England.
That's Gary Van Egmond talking ahead of the Matildas friendly tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time with Phil Neville's Lionesses. And Neville commented and believes taking on such a high-calibre opposition can only be beneficial in their run-up to next summer. Neville told Press Association Sport, "It will be a different kind of test than what we have experienced so far. I'm quite excited to see the players challenged to play against one of the top teams in the world." Great praise from the former Manchester United player and current England women's boss. Staying with the Matildas, their star forward Sam Kerr has been nominated for the inaugural FIFA Women's Ballon d'Or Award amongst 14 other players, including Brazil's Marta and Lyon's strike sensation Ada Hegerberg. Kerr was asked about her missing out on the FIFA Women's Best Player Award last month.
I wouldn't say I felt hard done by. I'm never someone that's going to sit here and say, you know, I should win awards, I should do this. But I felt like I'd had my best year. You know, I felt I had a better chance than the year before. I thought the year before it was obviously great to be nominated in the 10, but I'd just kind of broke through, where I felt like this time I had, you know, put a real good 18 months in of goal scoring, and not only that, playing well. But, you know, I don't play for individual awards, and, you know, when I found out, I was obviously happy for all the girls. One of them plays in our league and they probably deserve it too, and that's the thing about women's football. There's not enough, I guess, people don't see what other players are doing, and I would be in that category too. I don't watch the European League enough. So for me, it's just about proving people wrong, and I'd much rather have the World Cup trophy in my hand than FIFA Player of the Year next year.
With thanks to Fox Sports, that's Sam Kerr. And the FIFA Women's Ballon d'Or will be presented in Paris on December 3rd, with Kerr the only Australian in contention for the prize. And Perth Glory have confirmed that Alyssa Mortz has signed for the club for the upcoming W League season. The dynamic midfielder is no stranger to Glory fans, having made 14 appearances back in 2016-17 campaign. Her stellar performances in 2018 saw her joint top winner of the Red Stars Iron Woman of Character Award, and Glory head coach Bobby Despotovsky is confident that she will continue that rich vein of form in the W League. And later on the show, as Josh mentioned, we will have Perth Glory's head coach. 17-year-old goalkeeper Annalie Grove has secured a contract with Brisbane Roar for the upcoming W League campaign. The young Matilda will be eyeing off her W League debut and will be one of three shot stoppers in the Roar squad, including Matilda's goalkeeper Mackenzie Arnold. Elsewhere around the country, NPL Queensland star Megan McElliott has secured herself a Westfield W League contract with Canberra United following a successful trial period with Heather Garriock's squad. The Moreton Bay Jets striker scored 50 goals in an unbelievable local season and has been training with Canberra for the past few weeks. Garriock said, among other things, she was drawn to Megan's impressive goal-scoring record. And the Newcastle Jets have announced that American attacker Katie Stengel will return to the club for the upcoming season. And I believe we also have word from two of our Socceroos, Thomas Deng and Josh Risden.
Oh, it will mean the world to me. It's something that you want to do as a young kid. And for me, I'm still 21, so to be able to play for my country will be an amazing feeling, and I hope I can do them proud.
Yeah, it was a great initial camp in Turkey. It was good to get to know all the new coaching staff, a few new fresh faces in the playing group as well. So it was a really enjoyable week over there. Very happy to be involved in this camp as well. Obviously, we got our first game during these 10 days. So, really looking forward to it. Yeah, we haven't had a game for a while since the World Cup. So it'll be good to get back on out on the pitch in a game. Everyone's looking forward to it. It's going to be a tough week in training, obviously, over here in the heat. But, I'm sure everyone's put their best foot forward and, get off to a good start under the new boss's era.
To the A-League-based Socceroos, Thomas Deng and Josh Risden speaking in camp this week. We're going to have a heap more Socceroos chat to come in the second hour. But first, it is time to talk A-League and FFA Cup with the Sydney Morning Herald's Dom Bossy, who has been paying close attention to the preparation of both the Sydney sides. Dom, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you on the show, Dom. I believe you watched the FFA Cup semi-final between Sydney and Western Sydney. What did you make of the game? It seemed like a fantastic occasion out there and in a stadium that's not often used for A-League contests.
Yeah, it was a very, very special night. Playing out at Penrith was a great experience. A nice little stadium, and I think it was about 14,000 or just under 15,000 there, but it felt pretty full. But it was a great match, a real game of two halves, and I think the Western Sydney Wanderers will feel a little bit hard done by the scoreline in the end, considering the amount of chances they had. But in the end, I think just enough class and experience prevailed for Sydney FC. I think that got them over the line in the end. Their first three shots on target all flew into the back of the net. Now, that doesn't tell you about the class within their forward line. I don't know what will.
absolutely ruthless efficiency from the Sky Blues. But just on Penrith Stadium, why don't the Wanderers play there more often? It seems a much better venue than Spotless in terms of atmosphere. I mean, maybe it is a little far for some of those Western Sydney fans, but why is it that they haven't used Penrith while they're building their new stadium?
There's four or five pretty good reasons. It's not that far from probably their core membership base. I don't know how familiar you are with Sydney, but they've got a big stretch of membership that goes from Parramatta to Penrith. So it is on a train line. It is kind of connected for their core base. But there are a lot of other issues, and they relate to availability of the venue. Obviously, there's some clashes later on in the season with the rugby league team that's based out of there. First and foremost, their fans actually voted for Spotless and ANZ Stadium when they put it out to their members for a vote two and a half years ago or so, when they were looking to move from Parramatta. Corporates are an issue out of Penrith. There are some shortages of availability of boxes and so on, and also the size and capacity. Whilst it looks nice for a pre-season match, it still only holds 20-odd thousand or so, just under, I think. So some of the bigger games, they actually lose out financially.
Hi, Dom. It's Louise.
Hey, Louise. How are you?
Yeah, good, good. Great to have you on the show. A 3-0 defeat to their crosstown rivals, 12 days out from the start of the A-League season. How much do you really read into the Wanderers' performance after that result, and where do you think their issues were from the weekend?
It's a hard one to put your finger on because there was a lot of promise in their play. I think against any other side or even any other goalkeeper rather than Andrew Redmayne that night, they would have had at least one, two, maybe even three goals. So they would be kind of cursing their luck in that sense. They do seem to have a few issues in the heart of midfield. I feel there's a big lack of authority in the presence of the heart of the park. I thought Costa Grozos was very impressive. Albeit played slightly out of position. He's normally a number 10, not so much a number 6. So I think there's a bit more to come. Rashid Mahazi's arrival will probably add a little bit more experience in the park, but I think they really need Kieran Backus to step up. This needs to be a big year for him. He was excellent under Tony Popovich. He suffered alongside others with the transition to Josep Gombau, but he was let's not forget, he was a vice-captain of the club. He's now at that age where he needs to regain that form, and I think he can really be one to watch, but he's already shown that he's got some problems at the start of this season.
Absolutely. It wasn't so long ago that some people were talking about early Socceroos potential for Kieran Backus. So where has it all gone wrong for him?
Yeah, look, it's funny. I think the first game of last season, or maybe it was the second game, whenever the first derby was, we were writing about how the first derby was a battle for potentially a defensive midfield spot at the World Cup between obviously Brandon O'Neill, Josh Berlanti at Sydney FC, Chris Hurd, and Kieran Backus. So you're right, they were talked about, these players were held in such a high regard back then. I think, like I said, the transition away from Popovich's style to Gombau didn't help his cause. There was a lot of issues in the midfield under Gombau. He was a victim of that, but also I think his temperament hasn't really been befitting of a leader at the club. I think he's had a few kind of problems. I think one, I'll have to scratch my head in just jogging my memory, but I think there was an issue once relating to a potential release to another club. But I think there have been some attitude problems in training, dating back, I think about 9-10 months now.
Yeah, it seems as if the club has kept it under pretty close wraps, but I do remember a few disciplinary issues and so forth behind the scenes with Backus. Mm-hmm. So hopefully he can get his head screwed on and focus on his football, because they do need someone to control the game in that position. And the other position that worried me watching the game over the weekend was, I mean, Tarek Elrich playing at centre-back raised a few eyebrows, including my own. Patrick Ziegler, obviously absent, and he's a class player by the looks of things. Since he's come in, he's played very well in the limited amount that we've seen him. But does the lack of defensive depth in the Wanderers worry you?
Oh, it doesn't so much. I think it was a bit puzzling to see Tarek Elrich playing in a less than familiar role. But let's not forget, they do have other players there. Ruan Tongyike's another one who's got a lot of promise, and I think he's good enough to play there. I'm not sure if that was a tactical, maybe they thought Tarek can play in that role. Maybe there was some injury concerns or fitness concerns over Ruin. In fact, I'm almost certain there was. So I'm not too concerned over that in the long term. Maybe in the immediate term for round one, potentially. But I think they've got enough depth there for the rest of the season.
And Dom, what is the benchmark for the Western Sydney Wanderers this season?
It has to be to make the finals. Anything less than that is a failure. I think considering what they've gone through last season, they've invested heavily in a coach, probably not as much in their squad, but I think they still have a decent squad, one that should really be able to test some of the top teams, if not make a good run for the title themselves. But they need to, in fact, in my opinion, not only finish in the top six, I think really they have to finish in the top half of the table after what happened last season. Probably even third or fourth would be the bare minimum requirement I would set. But the difficulty in saying all this, of course, is that there are so many teams that have recruited really well. So to finish, I think, even in the top four is going to be some achievement this season when you look across the league.
And on that note, who do you think has recruited the best to this point?
Obviously, coming from a low base, I think Central Coast Mariners have done a fantastic job. If you look at their forward line with Ross McCormack, Tommy Orr's come in as well. Even Matt Simon's going to add a lot to their sort of presence up front. That's what they lacked last season. But Jonathan Aspro is going to be, or could be, one of the signings of the season. He's a defender that I rate very highly. He's very classy on the ball, reads the game well. I think if he comes back from his injury in time, he could add so much to a back line that struggled. But that's obviously coming from the lowest base last season. I think Perth Glory have strengthened really well. Matt Spranovich, it'll be great to see him come back. And Chris Economides is going to add a lot more sort of pace, creativity to their attacking line. And I'm hearing Diego Costa is in the best shape that he's been in since he arrived in Australia. And Andy Keogh, I think, is going to really flourish this year. They look good. Everyone knows how Melbourne Victory have recruited as well with their two big profile players. And Sydney FC is going to be a really interesting one, considering the players that they released, or let go, rather, to sign CM De Jong and Adam Lafondra.
Yeah, speaking of Sydney, they have recruited superbly well after losing two of the competition's best players, but CM De Jong is very different to Adrian Mijajewski, and Lafondra is very different to Bobo. So what have you seen from them so far about the way that they've adapted their playing style to suit these new recruits?
Okay, in all honesty, probably not enough to make a very firm decision just yet, but I think it looks like they're going to play a little bit more narrow through the park in attack, but they've got a lot more pace in the forward line. Trent Bahaja is probably the most notable addition that suggests that. But they've lost a bit of size in Bobo, and they've gained a lot of pace and dynamism in Lafondra and Bahaja. CM De Jong looks like he's probably not going to have the mobility that Mijajewski had, but he's got the technical ability, and he's at a great age. He's only 29 years old, and you know, he's played at some of the biggest clubs in the biggest leagues in the world.
And Trent Bahaja, you mentioned there, he's been an absolute revelation in pre-season, scoring a bag full of goals. Has he surprised you as much as he surprised me?
Yeah, he has, actually, mainly because he's playing in a slightly different role. If we remember, he played a lot out wide for Central Coast Mariners, understandably, given his pace. But the funny thing is that when he signed for Sydney FC, they were heralding it as the capture of the fastest player in the league. And then Central Coast Mariners go and sign Usain Bolt. So, yeah, he has surprised me in some sense, in particular his composure in front of goal. But it just shows that what happens when a promising young player goes to an environment that's probably got a little bit more quality and experience around him.
It makes me wonder how some of those younger players at the Mariners would fare, you know, if they're in a more functional environment. And Bahaja's seized that opportunity going to probably the strongest club in the league. But Dom, we haven't had a chance to hear your thoughts on the whole Congress issue that rumbled on and on throughout basically the past year or so, and the eventual resolution we saw last week. Which side of the debate did you fall on? And are you happy with the reforms that seem to be going through now?
I'm happy we have a resolution. Time will tell about, you know, what was the right decision. I think, though, what is very pleasing to see is the amount of voices that now have influence within
the FFA's Congress. I think that's undeniably a positive thing. The makeup of it, of course, there's some conjecture around, you know, who has the most influence. But I'm very happy to see that there are a lot more voices in there. I'm very happy to see that the women's game has been represented much more. In fact, well, it wasn't represented at all before. So these are all positive things. Now, we've got a lot of unity in the game now. Special interest groups and stakeholders have banded together for reforms against the FFA. Now we need maturity to see it through to completion, that to show that this was the right step forward. But so far, there's a lot of reason to be optimistic, but time will tell whether that's false hope or not.
One reason perhaps to be pessimistic, Dom, is the article you put out suggesting that expansion could be hindered by this Congress debacle and the changes that have been undergone as a result, the turmoil. And Morris Yemma from Southern Expansion has come out very strongly urging the FFA and the new board that comes in not to hold expansion back as a result. Do you think this is a realistic proposition, or is this a sort of worst case scenario that we get expansion held off for another year?
I think it's very important to note that the potential delay of A-League expansion is not a result, a direct result rather, of the Congress reforms that have been pushed through. It is a decision that could be made by the FFA board in response to it. Mm. Now, I know it's a very small detail, but it's very important because all along since the expansion process started back in March, I believe, a date of October 31 announcement had always been set. That was subject to change, but that was always a date that we were told. And this was operating within the background of the Congress issue. Now, no, everyone knew that the Congress issue was going along, and everyone knew that there was a risk, a very, very real risk, that some of the board members might not be re-elected at the AGM, which is separate again to the November AGM, which is separate again to the Congress. And I know it's all getting a bit bogged down in the politics of it, but what I'm saying is that the expansion was always supposed to happen regardless of any political decision that was going to be made or any political outcome that was going to be made within the game. So I think that for the good of the game, the FFA should go ahead with expansion. At the absolute very least, they should make their recommendations. And if they don't feel that they are capable of making a firm decision, then those recommendations should be passed on to the new board, who should make the decision by December. Now, if that delays it by another, another 5 weeks or so, hopefully that's not enough to delay the introduction of the teams, because we need two teams in by 2019 and 2020.
Yeah, lots to occur between now and the end of October, which is, as you touch on, the deadline for when the two teams are meant to be announced. But Dom, thank you so much. We'll leave it there, and we look forward to chatting to you again in the future.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
Dominic Bossi from the Sydney Morning Herald giving us a big insight into the Congress situation there, and really coming out with some strong words urging FFA not to stall or delay, because if it does get held back another year, that's another year of the A-League plateauing, of interest plateauing, and they've generated so much interest with the expansion process. So many people on these bids have worked so hard to get them up and running. I think it would be a huge slap in the face to the football community if it was to be held back.
Yeah, definitely. And it was very interesting to hear what Dom was saying, in the fact that the decision could be made by FFA in response to the whole Congress, everything that's gone on with Congress. So lots going on, as you touch on. It would be disappointing to see the A-League expansion pushed out, but who knows what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks. We'll have to keep our ears peeled to it. But Josh, we're going to take a short break. We've got plenty more coming up. Perth Glory's W-League coach, Bobby Despotovsky. You're listening to Evenings on FNR.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
Yes, this is Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio. You're with Louise Taffer and Josh Parrish, and we are celebrating FNR's first birthday. And you can get involved at any time by giving us a call on 03 9944 9999, or you can send us a tweet at FNR_radio. Joining us now, though, on the line is Perth Glory's W-League coach, Bobby Despotovsky. Bobby, thank you for coming on the program.
Not a problem. How are you?
We're great, thank you. And Bobby, firstly, your thoughts on a huge milestone for women's football with one of your own, Sam Kerr, becoming the first ever female marquee player?
Oh, look, you know what? It's only what she deserves, and also what this league deserves to in way of keeping her here in Australia. She had quite a few offers from European clubs, and you know, she chose to stay at home and play in the W League, which was great for everybody involved.
I'm sure it's fantastic for your team, Bobby. But how much did, you know, playing in Perth, a hometown, factor into the decision?
It's a big factor for Sam, especially that Sam is away from home hell of a lot of time. You know, she's not spending that much time at home with the family and mum and dad and the nieces and the brothers and everybody that she has here. So that plays on her mind, because she's probably about 8 or so months in America playing her trade there. And then when she's not there, she's representing the country with Matildas. So it's only fair that she wanted to come back, but also it played on her mind that she's only going to play football for so many years, so she needs to cash in somehow. And you know, it's great that the league come up with that and the Perth Glory, and she's the first marquee, which is great for everybody involved.
And Bobby, you're also a Perth local and were a former striker in your playing day. How has it been to watch Sam Kerr develop as a player throughout the 10 years she's been at the club? And how much of what you teach her is from your own experience?
Oh, look, you know, she started as a winger. She started as a winger, and you know, we changed probably her position 3 or 4 years ago. When I become a coach, I've seen that you know, as a winger, she's really unused as much as a striker. You know, it's she's too far away from the goals being a winger, and we changed that to be closer to the goal. And you know, in first year, yes, she missed so many chances, but with work and more comfortable she becomes up front, she develops that killer instinct and good finishing that she needs. And you know, it's been great watching her from where she's actually getting scared being in front of goals and rushing her decisions to now being cool, calm and collected in front of the goals, and picking her right options to finish the good work from the team or the Matildas or in America, whatever that might be.
It's been absolutely fantastic to see her progression, Bobby, and I'm sure it's in no small part thanks to some of the coaching she's received from you. But seeing her make the the Ballon d'Or shortlist today, it must be a pretty proud moment.
Absolutely, absolutely. Anything that you know, Sam does in her career, we monitor very closely here, and we're very, very proud that she's representing the state. But also on the, you know, when she's representing the state in W League, we are very proud. But also the whole Australian public should be very proud that one of our own Australian is actually in the top 15 players in the world, and also the more awards. So it's great to see that we as a country, as a nation, we're doing something right here and providing the opportunities for the young players like Sammy Kerr to progress and do what they love to do.
She's certainly a shining light for the Australian women's game. But talking about the Perth Glory women specifically, you had very little trouble scoring goals last season, but you also conceded a few at the other end. Is defensive shape a major focus coming into this new campaign?
Yes, yeah, definitely. We scored a lot of goals last year, but we also conceded a lot, which it's counterproductive anyway. But you know, yeah, we concentrate on fixing the defense. Obviously, we signed Eliza from Adelaide, Norton from Adelaide, and you know, we got reshape a little bit with some of the younger players in our back line that are. Are good players, but they needed opportunity to play, and which we this year we will give them. And I think defensively we will be stronger, and hopefully we can score equal amount of goals, if not more, this year. Obviously, we brought in Jacinta Calabadaraci from Melbourne. So she's going to be given a responsibility in the midfield to create something for us. And obviously two up front, Rachel and Sam, as we know last year, they scored combined 24 goals, I believe.
Yeah, that's it, Bobby. And how important was it for you to retain Rachel Hill? Because the dynamic duo that came with her and Sam Kerr, both were scoring and assisting each other. It was beautiful to watch. So, how important was it for you to keep her for the upcoming W-League season?
Yeah, look, we were in close monitoring Rachel Hill this year. Obviously, she had a lot more playing time than last year. Last year, she only played three or four games in US. And when she comes to us, she comes with very good pedigree, but not as experienced as some of the other players. And obviously, we gave an opportunity to play, and she just ran away with it. You know, she took it under her belt and created some great partnership with Sam Kerr. You know, if not scoring, then creating for Sam, and if Sam is not scoring, creating for Rachel Hill. So, you know, it was when we contacted Rachel Hill again, she was thrilled that we wanted her back, and you know, she worked with her manager and her club to come back again and play here. And from that point is, you know, I respect what Rachel does and how hard she works for the team. And obviously, she's a young player and we can't put too much pressure on her. But it's been great for us, and it's going to be great for Sam Kerr to again play with somebody that she's sort of familiar with up front.
And another player that Sam Kerr is very familiar with is Alyssa Mortz, who plays with her at Chicago Red Stars. Alyssa re-signing for Perth Glory today, I believe, after having a spell with the club back in 2016-17. What does she add to the side?
Look, Alyssa, we wanted to sign Alyssa last year as well, but we sort of ran out of time and ran out of the finances, and we decided to go with a different sort of a player in the midfield. Obviously, it didn't work out for us, but that's another story. But look, you know what? We gave Alyssa Mortz the opportunity too easy to play, and she was fantastic for us. So, you know what? To the point when we played in Adelaide, I actually apologized to her after the game, not signing her for last year. So, that was our mistake, and obviously when the opportunity presented itself to sign her again, I didn't hold back. It just we signed her straight away, and you know, she brings to us a stability and a work ethic in the midfield. She is a workhorse, and she's going to run 180 minutes for you. And not only that, she's fantastic in the air, and her energy around the midfield just lifts everybody around. But she's not only one that plays with Sam. There is Nikki Stanton that plays for the Chicago as well. So she's going to be coming back to us as well. So there is going to be three or four Chicago players with us.
And Bobby, the 11th edition of the W League is just around the corner. Are you happy with where you're tracking in the preseason at the moment?
Yes, very much so. We had a good hit out against WA State team last weekend. We scored some good goals, and the younger players, obviously we don't have our internationals as yet. Our younger group of players that we have and tracking very, very closely, and hoping that if not this year, next year, they step up onto the scene. Played extremely well. They carry out instructions from the coaches to the T, and you know, they run away winners 3-1. Not as much that they won the game, but in the way that they won the game, and in the way that they conduct themselves, in the way that they run out of game, and the fitness levels are not as yet at 90 minutes, but they're close to it. You know, we still have 3 weeks to go until the first game in Brisbane.
And Bobby, you just missed out on the final series last season. What are the expectations for 2018-19?
Our expectations are top four is a priority to get in, and then from there try to win it. Obviously, it's going to be very, very hard because there is some good teams with a lot of Matildas in, as Melbourne City and Sydney, and Newcastle is always a good proposition. You know, Brisbane is going to be there. So, you know, Canberra is strong. So you can't take any teams lightly. And you know what? I've been now in the league for 4 years, and the progression from 4 years ago when we had only a handful of internationals coming to W League to now where every single team has four international sports filled, it's extraordinary. The league just grows from strength to strength, and those internationals lift the league to the next level. Obviously, with all of our Matildas as well that playing in the league, and less Matildas now going overseas to play and to stay in the league because it's obviously financially more viable for them to stay here. They can easily from here go into any camp that Alan Stach wants them. It's very easy. They can monitor. They can actually send to the clubs their training regimes. Not as much as training regimes, but the fitness regimes that they want Matildas to be at, the top-up fitness regimes that they need to do, and all of that. So practically the whole league being sort of our Australian players and being here, working together for the Matildas to succeed, if that is at international level or in the friendlies or whatever that might be.
Yes, the growth of the league has been fantastic to see, Bobby, and you're making us pretty excited about the upcoming season with that description. But I remember you on this very radio station last season complaining about the extra travel, of course, the Perth Glory women having to do, being based where they are, and also the scheduling being rather unfavourable. Is there anything, obviously some of that is out of your hands, but is there anything you can do from a conditioning and a recovery perspective to prepare for those extra travel demands that really hit Perth when it doesn't hit other teams?
Yeah, you know what? If the players are full-time professional footballers, then I would not have one word about the scheduling. You're a full-time professional footballer. You training, you travel, you play, you come back, you have a recovery. That's not even an issue with the professional footballers. Unfortunately, we don't have. We have only five that are full-time, and the rest of them are full-time employees somewhere else. So they have full-time jobs outside of the football. And when you need to take 11 or 12 annual leave days, like they have to take this year just to compete in the league, it's very unfair. We do have a Thursday night games away from home, Friday night games, and that all affect these footballers here in such a way that They are, if you have a recovery session and you fly in late at night, so say from Brisbane, you are wiped out for 2 days because tomorrow is Monday and you can't stay at home and lazy around and do your recovery and stuff. You have to go to work. So that prolonged your recovery session. So when you come to a training session on a Wednesday or the Tuesday or whatever the next day you're training, you just add more onto your fatigue. It's not more to your fitness, it's more to your fatigue. So eventually, after 4 or 5 weeks, that catches up with you and they wipe you out for a week or two. Or in the meantime, you might sustain an injury or whatever that might be. So it's really that people, yeah, that people want to, put games on the TV and stuff like that. But we have a duty of care as a football coach, as a club, as a coach, to protect these players. And at this point of time, I'm sorry, but it's not much protection from the league and the scheduling department.
Well, Bobby, the league has improved in quality across the board, but obviously, as you outlined there, some issues still to work out. Thank you so much for joining us. Congratulations on re-signing your star player and a host of your other key contributors. The Perth Glory women's team is looking very strong ahead of this W League campaign. So thanks so much for joining us, and we look forward to chatting to you during the season.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me, guys.
Bobby Despotovsky, obviously a Perth Glory NSL legend and now a legendary coach of the Perth Glory women's side, making some very cogent points at the end there, Louise, about the struggles for part-time players to be able to travel across the country, especially for a Thursday or a Friday night game. Is that one of the reasons maybe that the W League is still not a full two rounds because of those demands on players?
Look, I just think that the travel, as Bobby touches on, is just crazy what some of the Perth teams have to do. They're lucky they don't have to fly to Wellington because that would be then something else. It takes a while, and Glory actually open against Brisbane Roar at Suncorp Stadium. And I think that, yeah, he highlights some issues in the game with the W League players not being paid as much, and that's why they have to take time off from work.
Yeah.
And it's a struggle. And I mean, we're slowly getting the game to a point where players are going to be paid a bit more than what they have been in the past, which is great to see. But you touch on with the Thursday nights, now we have standalone games. So how that impacts Perth, we'll have to see. But hopefully there won't be too much damage this season, because they are a very, very promising team, and I really hope they make finals.
I think the league probably needs them in the finals. It was a bit of a shame when they missed out last time, but they are the great entertainers. Louise, we must take a short break, because on the other side, we're going to have some power and passion. We're going to talk community football with Mark Tyrell, who is organising the All Nations Cup over at Knox City Football Club. That's coming up after the break here on Evenings on FNR.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
This is Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio, your voice of football in Australia and right around the world. And you're with Louise Taffer and Josh Parrish. And joining us now is Mark Tyrell from Knox City Football Club. Mark, thanks for coming on the show.
No worries at all. How are you?
And Mark, for all of those who don't know, what is the All Nations Cup?
And the All Nations Cup is a multicultural soccer festival that's been going on, and we've been hosting it for over 30 years. And it brings, it's a World Cup style competition, and it brings countries or communities within the Melbourne diaspora who bring teams and representing their country of origin, and they play off each year. And like I said, it's been going now for over 30 years. We've hosted it for 33 years. I think it's been running for 35 all up. So it's top quality community and MPL. And, you know, we get teams from, like this year we have 16 teams. We have had 20 in the past. But we have teams like Italy, who are the reigning champions. We've got England, Mauritius, Romania, Serbia, France, Greece, Australia, of course. Lots of countries come to bring their supporters over to Knox, and the evenings get long, the weather gets fine, and they come and cheer on their countries. It's a great opportunity for those supporters of those countries to be able to, you know, players to represent their countries and supporters to cheer them on. So, yeah, that's it really in a nutshell. It runs for 6 weeks. So it's a fair undertaking for a club. Like Knox City isn't a huge club. So, but we've got some really great dedicated volunteers who put this on each year. And it's the crowds are really good. And, you know, people come from all over the place to see it. Japan, Mark,
What did Japan bring to the competition, Mark?
Last year, Japan were in. They actually came across, like players came from Japan to play in it. Unfortunately, they weren't able to get themselves organised enough for this year. But, you know, we have countries that they put a lot of time and effort into being involved. And it is, like I said, it's a serious senior competition. It is pre-season. But the quality of players and the integrity of the competition is, you know, NPL and State 1 and international. We've had some internationals come and play for the event. So it's we market it as a great way of celebrating our diversity. It's what the world game has that no one else in no other sport in Australia really has. Is that you know, you don't have to speak the same language. You don't have to be from the same part of the world. But you put a round ball in front of people, and we can all be entertained and enjoy it and be as one and stand together and have a great time. And like I said, I mean, the teams that we have in this year's competition, I mean, they're from all over. We have a big contingent of emerging nations coming to Africa, like South Sudan and Eritrea and Somalia and South Africa. And they bring they've been recent additions to the competition. And they bring a great extra layer of diversity and excitement. And some of the football, I mean, last year we had some great displays. And if you look at some of the players that were playing for the African teams, and they're playing at the top level of in the NPL. So yeah, it's a great competition, and it's, you know, pretty unique, and we're really pleased to be the hosts.
Here on Evenings on FNR, we're speaking to Mark Tyrrell from Knox City Football Club about the upcoming All Nations Cup, which has been running for 33 years, and this year comprises teams from 16 different nations. It kicks off this weekend. Mark, what I want to know is, how do these teams get themselves together? Are they based around sort of existing club sides who have a national background, or how do they find all these players from these countries, you know, in the local diasporic communities and actually get themselves together as a functional football side?
Well, some communities are really, it's a really strong thing where it's part and parcel of their identity. So they've already got an established community, and so if you look at the older teams like Serbia and Greece and France who've been doing this for quite a while, and Italians, some of them are attached or aligned with certain clubs in NPL, but you know, we've got an England team this year where the players come from all over and are all playing at all different NPL clubs right across Melbourne. So people, what you get is you get the organisers and the team managers and that who are keen to actually put a team in, and then they go around and well, you know, there's something that thing about being able to represent the country is a kind of magnet for players, and because the reputation of the competition is that, you know, we've been playing for a very long time. People know that it's a good quality football and a well-run professional organisation. Even though we're all volunteers, we put in an awful lot of time to make sure, you know, that it's done right. We have FFE endorsed referees, and you know, we follow FIFA rules. So it's, you know, people want to be part of it, and we get every year we get an oversubscription of teams. We went up to 20 for teams last year, and it was manageable. It was difficult because you had to start games early because we run them over Saturdays and Sundays. But this year we've gone back to, we've kind of concentrated more on quality rather than quantity, and gone back to 16. We've been lucky as well this year in that we've managed it for the event to get a sponsor in Mercedes Teamwear and My Club Shop who've come on board with Knox, and we've had a great relationship with them at Knox, and they've come on and helped us take it to this next level. So it's really exciting times. We've got everyone coming to Knox on Saturday. I was talking to you this time last year, just after it had finished, and like in a blink of an eye, we're 11 months on and we're into the next event. So it's gone
quickly, hasn't it, Mark?
Has indeed.
Well, it's a fantastic celebration of multiculturalism, and based on some of the highlights I've been watching, a serious football competition as well. If people want to go down and watch the action, where's the venue and what time does the first game kick off this Saturday?
So the first game will be at 11 o'clock on Saturday. It's Wales versus South Sudan. All the games are played at our home ground, which is RD Egan Lee Reserve in Knoxfield. It's $6 entry, $4 with a commission card, and you pay in and you can watch four games in comfort because we've got a new terrace and new cover, and we put on a good feed and everybody stays hydrated. It's in Knox. We would ask the broader footballing public to come down. If your country's not in it, not to worry, you can adopt the country, and you can also just come and see some of the finest players up close. I remember a couple of years back, Kenny Atu was playing for South Sudan. That was the 20 minutes that he the first 20 minutes was something to watch. And Elvis from Avondale.
Oh, Elvis Campsober?
He was a revelation in this competition last year, an absolute revelation. And he was there representing his country, and you got to see him. You're getting to see these players that they know what they're doing.
Well, there you go, listeners. Yeah, so head on down to Knox this weekend. You might see the next A-League or NPL sensation, but you're sure to see some fantastic football. This competition is running for the next month and a half, and the final, I believe, Mark, is on the 24th of November.
Saturday the 24th. All fixtures and scores and all that will be up on our website and on Facebook and the usual digital platforms. But if anyone's interested that they might be wanting to get involved for next year, give us a call. We'd be very happy to talk to anyone.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for joining us on Evenings on FNR. It's a fantastic competition you're running, and we look forward to speaking to you again ahead of the business end of the competition.
Absolutely. You'd be very welcome to come along yourselves. We'd be delighted to have you.
Absolutely, Mark. Well, see if I can take you up on that. Thanks so much for joining us.
Cheers, guys. Thanks a lot.
Mark Tyrell from Knox City Football Club, promoting the All Nations Cup, which kicks off this weekend. It runs every weekend up until the 24th of November, which is the final. And there you go. Kenny Athieu played for South Sudan, and Elvis Campsover represented, I believe he's from Congo. So, some illustrious names in the history of the competition, and who might emerge this year, Louise? Not sure, but it's pretty exciting stuff.
It is, and it's great to see 16 different countries will compete to take the crown. I was just curious as to who and what countries they had to cut because they had too many and they couldn't handle the growth.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm not sure. Maybe that's confidential information. I don't think they have a formal qualification process, but they probably, having run this for so long, they have a good idea of the quality of the respective teams and how organised they all are. And 16 teams, as we know, is a lot easier a number to deal with because if you keep halving it, you're going to get down to a final two. But that's absolutely fantastic what they're doing down there at Knox City. A huge undertaking for a club that's not a giant of the region, but they're certainly celebrating diversity in football, and that's what we like to see.
Yes, and multiculturalism throughout the world's game. And that's incredible, the 33rd All Nations Tournament. Imagine if they got a few more volunteers on board. How big could this tournament get?
Absolutely. I mean, whether you can find people willing to donate quite a large portion of their time, I'm sure Mark has spent countless hours with the other ANC volunteers organising this tournament each and every season. So, you know, I wonder if they can potentially do a FIFA and expand the tournament. You can even double it to 32 teams if you've got enough help down there. But we'll have to get down and have a watch of some of the action this time around. We're going to take a short break, Louise. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit of national team football. Obviously, the Socceroos coming into camp, the Matildas at Craven Cottage preparing for their friendly with England. That's coming up after the break here on Evenings on FNR.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
This is Evenings on FNR, and it's FNR's first birthday. Isn't that incredible, Josh? It's just flown.
Absolutely. 1 year already. I wonder how quickly the next year is going to zip past, because we just keep getting busier and busier with all of this football, Louise, and time flies when you're having fun.
It does, and it's a good problem to have.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially when we're working in one of the best industries.
Yeah, I mean, look, we can't complain about our day jobs, you and I. I'll get to talk about football every day, and we love it. I'm sure you do too. If you want to give us a call on any subject, you can do so on 99 44 99 99 03 in front of that if you're outside of Victoria. Or you can send us a text on our SMS line, which is 0428 933 45.
It's time to switch our focus, though, to the Socceroos. We heard earlier that FFA have advised that Huddersfield Town's Aaron Moy won't feature in the upcoming training camp in the UAE or next week's international friendly against Q8 after he suffered a groin strain, Josh.
Yeah, it's one of these that seems a bit minor, but the English clubs, they like to keep their players in cotton wool, especially when they're flying off to the other side of the world, if they don't. So it doesn't seem like a huge concern, but probably best that he doesn't make the trip. If it was a more serious game, I suspect they might be trying to risk him and get him on the pitch for a few minutes. But as it stands, probably better that he stays and focuses on his recovery and his Premier League season, because we know he's going to be in the Socceroos consideration. It's not really even a question. It's other players who have to impress Graham Arnold.
Well, that's it. And the same case, it's similar for Matty Ryan,
yeah,
who, you know, is at Brighton and also has a minor injury. He isn't going to be leaving his club. And it's similar to what is going on with the Matildas. Some of the big players are being left behind just so, you know, they can recover, take a week or two off, and then come back re-energised. And obviously the Socceroos play their next game against Korea Republic, and that will be in Australia, so I'm sure we'll see them there.
Absolutely, that's a huge one. Q8 seems to be a bit more of a warm-up game for Graham Arnold, obviously a lower-ranked side internationally, but they will be playing in the heat, which should be good preparation for the Asian Cup coming up in January. And in regards to the Matildas, I think it makes even more sense that they get a rest, because so many of those players play for multiple club teams, sometimes two, sometimes even three, and they rotate around the world on various loan deals. And I heard a statistic, I think it was Steph Catley had 2 days off, was
yep,
it?
That's correct.
In the entirety of the past year. So those Matildas do need a rest wherever they can get it. And international friendlies, you know, you don't really mind too much if they're established first team players taking a break.
That's exactly right. And when it's one player's loss, it's another's fortune. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing a lot of the players who don't normally get game time come into the fold and get some minutes into their legs. And it also gives the young players an opportunity.
Yeah, and the Matildas' young players are especially young, because, you know, young Mary Fowler, what is she, 15 years old?
15 years old. Getting, isn't that incredible?
Getting on the pitch in against France. I mean, if that was happening in the men's game, that would be international headlines. So it just shows how prodigious some of these young Matildas' talents are, and I'm sure that will do them a world of good getting experience at that high, high level.
Oh, for sure. And as we were touching on yesterday, you look at someone like Alana Kennedy, who is one of the Matildas defenders, and she has been in the team for so long that you think she is like, you know, 30 or something, but she's only 23. Yes. And she's had more than 60 caps for her country. Isn't that incredible?
That's absolutely insane. I mean, obviously there are more international fixtures in the women's game, but still, that cap record is usually what you'd get in an entire career in the men's game, and a very successful one at that. So absolutely phenomenal. And Alana Kennedy, you could see how much they missed her against France. I mean, she's such a leader in the defensive line, both in terms of her actual defensive work and her distribution of the ball. So I think she's one that, you know, maybe isn't so easily replaceable, even considering the depth they have.
Yeah, well, that's it. And I mean, touching on some of the other players like Caitlin Ford, she's the same age. She's in her early 20s and she's already had 60 caps for her country. So I think that the Matildas are coming into a really good stage heading into the FIFA Women's World Cup because they're all maturing at the perfect time. And it seems like they've clocked up enough experience to take it to the next level.
Do you think, though, with some of the coverage around the Matildas, you know, it's almost relentlessly positive and with good reason because, you know, they've achieved so much. But, you know, they went in as favourites for the Asian Cup. They didn't win the Asian Cup. You know, they didn't win the tournament over in the US. They've gone and lost to France, which is a team that they have to really compete with if they want to be really serious contenders. And I wonder whether maybe we don't critique the Matildas as harshly as we would otherwise, just because we're so delighted with their progress. But if you're going to treat them as World Cup contenders, you probably have to hold them to a pretty high standard, a standard to which they, I'm sure, hold themselves. And I wonder also whether the standard that the Matildas are at is really reflective of, you know, the organisation and the resources going into the game at local level, or whether it's just really a freak generation of talent that, you know, we're fortunate enough to benefit from, but maybe not at an organisational level responsible for.
You highlight some good points. And the Matildas were unlucky not to win the Women's Asian Cup. Of course, they were edged out in the final by Japan, a very, very good Japanese side.
Oh, of course.
I think we don't come up against European countries enough.
Mm.
I think that having these fixtures against world number three England and France is just invaluable. And Gary Van Egmond said post-match that, you know, despite a 2-0 loss, it was actually a win for them because, you know, they were able to play against the world's best. And that's not something that happens every day. It's very hard for the Matildas to get game time against non-Asian countries. So
yeah.
I think that the more they come up against this type of opponent, and obviously we have the upcoming games against Chile as well, it'll only do them the world of good. And even more so, they're coming up against Phil Neville's Lionesses tomorrow. So that'll be another really good test.
And it's an eye-opener for us as well. I mean, I think, especially in the women's game, we're fairly guilty of not really casting our eyes outside of our own borders. You know, we've got some knowledge of the American League because so many of our Matildas play over there. But with regard especially to the European teams, I'm not as well-versed as I probably should be. And, you know, you don't watch that much of the Super League over in England or the Champions League. So seeing what these teams have to offer in England and especially France, who are going to be playing on home soil and, in my opinion, are real contenders for the trophy. Imagine that, champions of the men's and women's game at the same time. That would be absolutely unreal. But, you know, it's a real eye-opener, not only for the Matildas in actual real game experience, but for us as media people and fans, seeing what the standard really is out there and what the Matildas are up against if they want to be world champions.
Yes, exactly. And I think that a lot of the players who play in that French national team come from Olympique Lyonnais, and they are just incredible.
They're dominant.
They are very dominant. They've won the domestic league more than 13 times, so and they've just recently taken it out. So they have a lot of heavyweight players. A number of them have also been nominated for the FIFA Women's Ballon d'Or. So that's what the Matildas are coming up against. And again, to have that experience is invaluable. Going back to a comment you just made on the resources, I don't think that there is enough funding put into not only our Matildas team, but also our youth national teams. And that's where the problem lies, because especially with the national teams, they have to be gaining game time against quality opponents. And where does that come from? The right amount of funding and resources put into each team. So to make that happen, I mean, it's been all over the shop, I think. And now that the Congress is all starting to change, it'll be interesting to see. And actually, that was one of Stephen Lowy's issues was will the national team programs receive the right amount of funding after the whole decision?
It's interesting you say that because, you know, that's one of FFA's main concerns. And FFA, to their credit, they've made a lot of mistakes, but they are usually pretty good at organising the national team side of things. And in terms of the women's game, though, I think, you know, the new Congress might actually have the opposite effect because there actually is a women's council on the Congress for the first time ever. So they'll actually get a direct say in, you know, FFA affairs, who's elected to the board, what kind of people with what interests are able to make those kinds of key decisions. So I think they might actually benefit from that. You know, maybe the men's teams, you know, maybe their funding might be directed more towards the A-League and so forth and the professional game, which is something that FFA is fretted and worried about. But again, that actually could feed back into the men's game and make it more successful because, you know, as we know, the domestic league is absolutely crucial in any kind of sustained national success. Having the Women's Council, I think, will make a huge difference long term in terms of those decisions that are made with regards to resources and making it a more level playing field.
Yeah, exactly. And I just want to see the resources distributed accordingly, not only to the, you know, men's national team, but the women's national team, the men's and youth, the men's and women's youth national teams. We saw last year when the young Matildas were qualifying for the under 20 FIFA Women's World Cup, how crucial it was that they got sufficient amount of game time together leading into the AFC qualifiers. It was amazing to see that Gary Van Egmond was able to schedule something that didn't even get much coverage, was a tri-international series at the Australian Institute of Sport, where Canada and the US, their under-19 teams, actually came out.
Mm.
They flew out to the AIS to play against the young Matildas, and that was invaluable for them, and you could see that, and it showed in their results when they came into AFC qualifiers. So I think if we can have more of that for all of our national team programs, then we'll be certainly heading in the right direction.
And the funding as well, it's not just the, you know, the allocation of existing funds, it's the game having more, you know, potentially governmental funding as a result. I mean, sports funding at a federal level is, you know, all to do with equality and opportunity for women, and what better, you know, resource to put it towards than women's success at World Cup level or at Olympics level. And when you look at the funding breakdown, when football gets half as much as, say, rowing, based on, you know, national participation rates, it's, it makes it tough because, you know, you've only got a limited pool of resources. But we must leave the Matildas discussion there and talk a little bit of Socceroos, because they've come into camp, and one of the bolters for the squad, Thomas Deng, Melbourne Victory defender, very versatile player, getting his first taste of national team action. Let's hear what he had to say about his involvement with the Socceroos camp.
Oh, it's an amazing feeling. It's almost it's surreal. When I found out the news, I think Joel messaged me a few days before the final squad was announced. I think I woke up in the morning and I read his message. Straight away I rang my missus and told her the news, and she was really happy, and it's an amazing feeling to be here. When I told my family and when I broke the news to them, they were really proud of all the work that I've done in the past, and there's still a lot of work to be done, but it's a big achievement and one that I'm really happy for.
What are you expecting this week in camp and also the match against Kuwait?
For me, it's a different experience playing at a international level with some very good players in the national team. I'm looking forward to the game and, you know, seeing how the team works and all the staff and see how everything goes. You know. As a kid, it's something that you dream of and something that you want to do when you get older. So I'm very happy to be here. It's a massive achievement again, and my family is very happy as well.
Of course, you do play your club football at Melbourne Victory, and you've got lots of people around you that play for the Socceroos in the past. Kevin Muscat, Baltram Bolin, Carl Valeri, to name just a few. Did they offer any advice or wish you well as you came to camp?
Yeah, just wish me well, and they congratulated me for this, for being called up for my first camp, And the main thing that they said, just enjoy it and train hard. Yeah, round one starts off with a bang, so I'm looking forward to going back and starting off with a good win against our rivals. I think will put us in good stead for the season.
There are several fresh faces at Melbourne Victory this season. How do you feel the team is placed to defend the championship that it did win in May?
Yeah, we've got some very good players coming in, especially for the ones that we lost. Yeah, we've got some very big names like Honda, of course, very experienced player, and also Ola, big Swedish striker, was just at the World Cup as well, and a centre-half, German, and one Spanish midfielder that's on loan. So, yeah, I think we'll be ready to go round one, and they'll get better and better each week.
And Thomas, just lastly, if you do get to pull on the green and gold jersey next Monday night against Kuwait, what would that mean for you and your young career?
Oh, it'll mean the world to me. It's something that you want to do as a young kid. And for me, I'm still 21, so to be able to play for my country will be an amazing feeling. And I hope I can do them proud.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, and that was Thomas Deng speaking of what it would mean to him to pull on a Socceroos jersey next Monday. And someone else who has arrived in Dubai ahead of this week's training camp is the Western Sydney Wanderers, Josh Risden. He arrived on Sunday after playing the semi-final of the FFA Cup.
Yeah, it was a great initial camp in Turkey. It was good to get to know all the new coaching staff, a few new fresh faces in the playing group as well. So it was a really enjoyable week over there. Very happy to be involved in this camp as well. Obviously, we got our first game during these 10 days. So, really looking forward to it. I think, everyone's looking forward to it. We haven't had a game for a while since the World Cup. So it'll be good to get back on out on the pitch in a game. Everyone's looking forward to it. It's going to be a tough week in training, obviously, over here in the heat. But, I'm sure everyone's put their best foot forward and, get off to a good start under the new boss's era.
Training starts this afternoon. What do you think the coaches will be looking for this week as we prepare for Kuwait?
It's going to be a tough week, obviously, like I said, with the heat. But it's got to be something we've got to get used to, obviously, playing in Asia. They're just going to be looking, just everyone trying their best, just putting their best foot forward. Obviously, getting used to the style that Arnie wants to play. Everyone listening and taking on instructions. To improve as a team.
Did mention the heat and the humidity here. We have quite a lot of players coming from cooler climates. So what advice have the SNC guys given to you?
Yeah, it's been great. Obviously, they're always on the ball in terms of nutrition, hydration, everything like that. So it's good to get advice to improve your playing performance. So, they got in touch with us before the flight, when to be sleeping, when to be having caffeine, that sort of stuff, and to definitely hydrate, because we're going to be coming into a hot climate, something that a lot of players aren't usually used to playing in. So it's going to be tough. Everyone's taken on board the instructions from the staff, and hopefully that can prepare us for the game. Yeah, back to business now. After a long pre-season, it's sort of getting closer and closer, and everyone's sort of hanging out for that round one, being such a long pre-season. So it's obviously drawing Perth first round against our old team, obviously against Popovich as well. So it'll be big for both clubs. Really looking forward to it, and hopefully, we can get off to a good start. They'll always stay with me. I think a few of the family are Western Sydney fans now. It'll be good to see them. Obviously, haven't seen them. Been back to Perth for a while now, so there'll be a big busload coming up from Bunbury, and it'll be able to good to see the family that weekend. Hopefully we can get a win and start our season off really well.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, and that's the Western Sydney Wanderers, Josh Risden, who is in Socceroos camp, and just explaining some of the conditions at the moment. The heat certainly seems to be something that they're struggling with in Dubai. But they are certainly looking forward to the upcoming camp and game against Kuwait. Well, we're going to take a short break, and coming up is Aussies Abroad.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
This is Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio. You're with Louise Taffer and Josh Parrish. And it's our first birthday. We're celebrating it today. And you can get involved at any time throughout the show by tweeting to us at FNR underscore radio. But right now, Damien Davies, our Australians Abroad expert, is on the line. And Damien, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Louise. How are you tonight?
I'm great, thank you. And I hear it's been a tough week in the European club comps for our Australians.
Yeah, there's a handful of Australians playing in the group stages in both Champions League and Europa, so maybe starting the Champions League. Obviously, we're happy that a couple of the Aussie boys are running around for PSV, but they did lose to Inter Milan in their tie last week with both Bage and Trent Sainsbury sitting on the bench. A little bit better for Djiganic in that he got 90 minutes, but his Serbian side did get touched up a little bit by PSG, losing 6-1. Probably not a lot of shame in that, to be honest. PSG are in fine form, as we all know. And then in Europa, all three Aussies that played last week were all on the wrong side of the ledger, unfortunately. Danny Vukovic playing 90 minutes, Jenny Al playing and starting for his Cypriot club. He did get an assist in their loss, and Alex Gersbach got 90 minutes, which was good to see, but unfortunately his team lost that tie as well. There was one successful Aussie in the European comps last week, and that was in the youth leagues for UEFA that started last week. There's a young kid for Australia, a young Australian kid called Antoine Martinez, who's playing at Midtjylland in Denmark, the same club as Mobile. He played 90 minutes for them, and they had a 2-1 win last week, which is good news.
And over in England, Damien, a couple of our Aussies got some much-needed points in the fight against relegation.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a tough couple of weeks, but Matt Ryan and his Brighton side had a 1-0 win on Friday night against West Ham, which was great to see. And then Aaron Moy got a 1-1 tie with Burnley. Again, Moy proving to get heaps of plaudits for his season so far. So good to see that. Championship level, kind of quite a few Aussies playing there as usual, as you have seen the last couple of weeks as the season has progressed. Probably a few worth noting. James Meredith at Millwall got a win on the weekend, which is good. They're down near the bottom of the table, so it certainly needed that. Massalongo's QPR got a draw on the weekend with Mass getting 90 minutes. Ryan Edwards, unfortunately, lost on the weekend but had a draw midweek, so they did pick up a point. Rotherham has had a good start to the year. And Jackson Irvine was a bit of a concern probably this time last week with an Achilles injury. We weren't quite sure how bad it was, but he seemed to shake that off pretty quickly. He did start again this week. Unfortunately, Hull City did lose, and they are in a bit of a scrap at the bottom of the table. So hopefully they can turn it around. And all three of our Aussies in League One, Kenny Dougal, Ryan McGowan and Burgess, all played 90 minutes on the weekend, with Kenny Dougal and Barnsley the only ones winning.
And Kenny has been rewarded for his form. He's into the Socceroos squad as an injury replacement player after Aaron Moy has stayed home. He suffered a little groin strain in a draw with Burnley, so he won't be travelling. But good to see Kenny Dougal getting an international look in after his form over in the Netherlands last season and his form for Barnsley this season. Damien, I wanted to talk Scotland, and the Aussies have absolutely invaded Scotland, especially Hibs. But we have a new player to call Australian in Martin Boyle, who will be part of this Socceroos camp. He's never been to Australia, but his father is Australian, so we've made a pretty handy signing there.
Well, I think, yeah, his debut for the Socceroos in a fully-fledged international will be on Australian soil, hopefully. So that could be his first trip down under. But, yes, he obviously had a big week. By all reports, he's been scouted for quite some time, and Ange came close to get him across. And the fact that he's now been named and it's all out in the open, I think, is a fantastic thing. And he obviously celebrated on the weekend with a goal for Hibs, a pretty handy-looking goal as well. Obviously, the Aussie boys are doing very well, as you said, but Milligan got another 90. My understanding, he's now kept a clean sheet. Well, Hibs and Milligan have now kept a clean sheet for the last five games, something astronomical like that. So he's in great form. Ryan Edwards and Andy Rose started for their respective clubs. Jesse Curran came on for Dundee. And then last night, Celtic got snuck home with a 6-0 win, of which Tommy got three assists. So fantastic to see that, with Bengariccio being used for Hearts as well in their game against Rangers. So plenty of Australians doing well there. Even if you drop down to championship level, there was a couple of good things to note with Jack Erndale starting for Grenek Morton on the weekend. They had a draw, and Lyndon Dykes having an assist in his 90-minute appearance for Queen of the South. I think that they end up with a 3-3 draw, so it would have been an entertaining game for all fans.
And Jesse Curran was another player who was on the radar for the Socceroos, given their right-back problem.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see. I was reading an article or an interview in the English press with Ryan Williams earlier today that was talking about him being on some kind of standby list. I'd love to see what that standby list looks like. There would have to be about a dozen decent players, well, players with a decent shout at the moment that would have to be there or thereabouts. And Jesse Curran has certainly been one of those that have been talked about, and I love the way Arnie is kind of spreading the net a little bit wider. And it'd be great to see a few more guys get introduced to the system over the next sort of 6 to 12 months, and certainly, you know, in build up to the Asian Cup, but then as we build towards the next World Cup as well.
Just returning to Martin Boyle, he's been the subject of a bit of an international tug of war. Apparently, the Scotland manager Alex McLeish made a late play to try and get him back in the Scotland squad. Does it feel good for you as a Socceroos fan, having lost quite a few players to other countries over the years? You know, Josip Simenic comes to mind. A little bit satisfying to sort of get one back, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess you could say that. I think, you know, it's one of those things, right? Until they're actually over that white line, it's still game on, right? And Geniao is a perfect example. I mean, he was in a Greek squad for their seniors, and they never took him off the bench. So he never stuck foot on the ground as a Greek player, and now he's fully-fledged Australian, right? So it's an interesting one. There's a couple of the younger guys that are floating around at the moment that are they're playing their youth football not for Australia, but they're eligible for Australia. So it'll be interesting to see as those guys develop. There's bound to be more tuffles between countries. And I think the fact that the Australians have now qualified for multiple World Cups, they're going to be playing Asian Cup every 4 years as well. I think the attraction of playing for Australia is a lot better than what it was maybe even, you know, 10 years ago, right? When maybe we did have a couple of issues around people not necessarily choosing Australia. But, you know, I think we probably bat of our weight when players do have the choice.
It's no longer like surfing for England, as Craig Johnston once infamously said. But let's go over to the continent, Damien. Starting in Germany, a lot of Socceroos and fringe Australian players making important first-team appearances, some getting through 90 minutes, others coming off the bench.
Yeah, so Matt Lecky is probably the headliner in Germany. He did come off the bench and was on the side of a draw this week at Hertha. Robbie Crewe started, had a 1-0 win. Netherlands was probably the big one over the weekend, with Trent Sainsbury getting 90 minutes in the heart of defence for PSV, with others Bage coming off the bench late in that game as well. Arjen Hoestijk had another 90 minutes for Groningen in the Netherlands. That was a 90-minute appearance, but a loss for him. And Denny Generaal got another start in a win for his club, PEC. So quite a few Aussies going well in the top level. Then the second and third tiers as well. Pasquale was used on the weekend. A young midfielder by the name of Thomas Prinsen, who was at PEC in the youth leagues. He's now at Almere City. In the third tier, he was used again on the weekend. He's probably made about 6 or 7 appearances so far this year for 18-19-year-old. Started his career very well. And then some of the ones that you talk about in Croatia, for example, Steve Lustica was used this week. Anthony Kelly got another 90 minutes. Geniar got 90 minutes, which is good. The guys in Denmark going really well. I mean, he got 90 minutes and assist as he side drew this week, and Mabil started and got an assist this week as his side won. So Mabil's going really, really well. And then some of the guys that are probably a little bit in and out at the moment. Shuznar got 90 minutes on the weekend. Denny Yurik, Tommy's younger brother, was a used sub. Gersbach started again. Jimmy Jago and James Holland both started in Holland. Vukovic got another big win in Belgium. So a good mix of, I guess, countries and leagues that our Aussies are playing in, and some pretty important names that are back running around leading into the camp as well.
And turning our attention to Asia, a return to action for several Australian players.
Yeah, so in Japan, Andrew Nabu returned to the field this week. He was used, an unused sub last week. He was used sub this week. So good to see him probably about 4 months, maybe 4 months, 4 weeks, sorry, ahead of schedule, which is great. Jason Gehry has started. He's been a little bit quiet in the second tier in Japan for the last 2 or 3 months, but he's back out there running around. Mitch Langerak got 90 minutes. Unfortunately, his side did go down this week. And Pierce Waring, the Victory kid who's over in Japan as well, was used for the under 23 side this week, who were playing in the third level J3. And then in Korea, there's a couple of guys as well. McGowan has been a bit unheard of the last couple of weeks. He was back on the bench for his club side this week. Connor Chapman got another 90 minutes. And Alex Jovanic, who's a centre-back, we've talked about a few times. He's been all over the place. He's now pulled together probably 4 or 5 full appearances at centre-back for Jeju. So good to see him getting his career back on track. Probably the biggest one in Asia would be Tim Kale. He made his starting debut this week for his new club side in India. They managed a very late draw, but he was up against Eric Pasalu as well, who was playing for Bangalore. He had 90 minutes on the other side of the pitch. So good to see our Aussies doing well in India, Korea, Japan. Take your pick across the board there.
Who would have bet for that reunion, Eric Pasalu and Tim Cahill playing against each other in India? But football's a funny old game, and Tim Cahill getting his first outing for Jamshedpur FC. As you said, 72 minutes, which I think is more football than he played cumulatively for Millwall across his entire spell there.
Yeah, I think, yeah, between Millwall and Melbourne City, he didn't get a lot of minutes in his last season or so, right? So, yeah, you're probably right. 72 minutes would be about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about our coaches, Damien? It seems they're getting onto a good run of form. Both Harry Kewell and Ange Postecoglou picking up wins.
Yeah, they did. Harry had a very good win away this week. 1-0 result. That's now 3 in a row for Harry. Not to be outdone, as you say. And had a 2-1 home win this week. Also 3 in a row for him. So while Harry's got a lot of the season to go, Ange hasn't got that many weeks to go at Yokohama. He's probably now officially clear of relegation. They're up into 10th spot. They're still the leading goal-scoring side in the J-League as well. So, and just certainly turned it around over the last couple of months. And the reports that are being written about him in terms of the style that he's introduced to Yokohama is all very, very positive, and certainly on a journey, right? It's not about one season. It's about a plan over multiple seasons. So good luck to him.
Yeah, I'm sure Ange would back that viewpoint up. It's about the process, and I've seen it, you know, written by a few J-League experts that they think his side will be contending for the title next season. It seems to fluctuate in terms of table positions quite a lot from season to season in the J-League, and if Yokohama can carry this form into next season and build on what they've done, they could be contending up the other end of the table.
I know. It would be good to see. I did hear somebody tongue-in-cheek mentioning that Ange will go chasing Mitch Langerak in the off-season, so we might have more reason to follow Yokohama.
I wonder if the Japanese FA might end up chasing Ange. He's one of the outstanding coaches in the J-League and certainly playing some of the best football and earning a lot of plaudits. Despite their defensive record, they've scored so many goals and played such nice football. Every time you see one of those clips of Yokohama playing the ball all the way out from the back, it's a delight to behold, and he's well appreciated over in Japan, it seems.
I go on record as saying I don't want to run into him as the national coach of Japan in the Asian Cup final. No thanks.
I wouldn't either. Damien, we must leave it there. Thank you so much for your company and your in-depth update on all the Australians playing overseas.
No problem at all, guys. Have a great night.
That was Damien Davies, our Aussies Abroad expert, giving us an in-depth overview of all the Australians playing their football over in Europe, in Asia, across the world, and our coaches as well.
Indeed, and imagine that, coming up against Ange Postecoglou in the Asian Cup.
That would be frightening. And
what a narrative. You wouldn't really be able to write a script like that.
I think it's probably a little far-fetched. I'm engaging in a little bit of baseless speculation, but Ange's football probably suits the Japanese a lot more than it suits Australia in some ways. I mean, he's always admired the Japanese team and made no secret of that, their technical play, so I really hope he does have domestic success. I mean, you know, some people are saying, you know, he's not in charge of the Socceroos, I don't care anymore. But it does matter for Australia, for our international reputation, that our coaches are successful overseas. And not just in terms of, you know, the next Socceroos coach, because Ange isn't coming back to the job anytime soon. I mean, maybe Harry Kewell could be a contender down the line. But it does matter just from Australia's reputation as a football country that we do have successful exports coaching overseas. And Ange is the best example of that at the moment.
And there's actually another one with Joe Montemurro, who's at Arsenal Ladies, and he's doing a fantastic job over there. And it also creates a pathway for young players as well. Hopefully we can send some young Australians over to Arsenal and to the UK. And there you go. You've got another outlet where they can play their football and take their career to the next level.
Well, you've just reminded me, Louise, speaking of outlets for young players, Harry Kewell, of course, coaching with Notts County now in League 2, taking over from Kevin Nolan. And he's won 3 games on the bounce. And he's returned from his touchline ban in spectacular fashion. And he's taken on a young Australian trialist who, for the youth team, scored against the Newcastle United youth team quite recently. Do you know who that player was?
No, tell me.
Josh Bingham.
Oh, wow.
Former Central Coast Mariner Josh Bingham could be signing on for Notts County. Incredible journey for him, and the benefits of having an Australian coach in charge, because I suspect he would not have been picked up otherwise. An English coach at that level would not know who Josh Bingham was, but well done to him for making the move over to England and hopefully making the next step in his career.
As I said, the fact that we have Australian coaches overseas, it creates a pathway for some of our Australian players. We're going to leave that there, Josh. We're going to take a short break, and coming up to wrap up the show, we will look ahead to the Matildas' upcoming game against England. You're listening to Evenings on FNR.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.
This is Evenings on FNR, and the Matildas play England tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. And after a 2-0 loss to France 3 days ago, they will be looking to turn around their performance against the Lionesses. It's certainly a fixture that is eagerly anticipated, and the last time the Lionesses faced Australia was during the 2015 Cyprus Cup, where Jodie Taylor's hat-trick helped defeat the Matildas 3-0. As I said, an improved Australia will be looking to balance the books. And it's actually the first time England have played in London since 2014 and the first time an England senior team has played at Fulham in over 100 years. So it's going to be a fantastic match under the floodlights at Craven Cottage.
Absolutely. And you can only cast your mind back to the Australian men's team beating England at Craven Cottage. Could we see similar scenes to back in, 2003?
Hopefully. England will be without their midfielder, Jill Scott, for the friendly tomorrow morning. The Manchester City star sat out of the Lionesses' 1-0 win over Brazil at Meadow Lane on Saturday as a precaution, but it's understood that she has now gone back to the WSL club. England have confirmed that she's got a bit of discomfort in her ankle and needs further evaluation. The news also comes just after Jodie Taylor and Karen Bardsley were also forced to pull out of the squad at the beginning of training last week. Jodie Taylor, who's playing with Seattle Reign, left the squad after bruising to the bone, which needs time to recover, and Manchester United's goalkeeper, Siobhan Chamberlain, will be brought in to replace Karen Bardsley. So England are without a few players. Hopefully this will help Australia and their fortunes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Australia not without a few of their key players as well, but it's going to be fascinating to see this England side who had some turmoil in the past year or so with their former coach Mark Sampson, all the allegations around Ennio Luco, which are well documented, and then Phil Neville coming into the role rather controversially without having a background in women's football. So we'll see what he's done with the side and whether they're up to the scratch of their male counterparts who are, progressing very well into Gareth Southgate.
And Phil Neville has given Australia high praise, saying that it'll be great for his country to come up against the quality of Australia. But one player, as you touched on, who is being rested is Sam Kerr. And this is what she had to say when she's given a bit more of a backseat role.
I'm terrible. When I'm not in control, I'm terrible. Like, when I play, I don't get nervous. When I'm not playing, like when I'm sitting on the bench, oh my God, I can't watch. Like, I get so nervous and I'm just excited for the girls and I want to help out, but I just am the worst watcher. I get so nervous. It's like it's not even my team, but it is my team, so it's funny.
There is a team group, but, you know, when you're not in camp, it can be so repetitive. So they actually remove us and then put us back in, which is nice. But I speak to the girls on a daily basis, and they're all really excited. Anytime you get to play France and England, who are two of the top teams in the world, it's going to be a huge game. So they're all really, really excited. And then, you know, we've got the W League round, so probably shut them out.
With thanks to Fox Sports, that's Sam Kerr. And Sam also commented on what the Matildas need to do to win the upcoming FIFA World Cup.
Yeah, I think the first thing is stay injury free. We've got such a great team and a young team, and you know that this is the danger time now, and this is the time where everyone starts to get a bit worried about getting injured. But honestly, I think if we just keep tracking the way we are, we've had some really great results over the last few months and had some players step up. Ellie Carpenter's really stepped up the last few months, and we just need everyone to play their part. We don't need anyone to, you know, do anything extravagant, and I think that's what we've done the last few months and year now. So I think just keep tracking the way we are, and obviously there's lots of work to be done, but we've just got to stay level-headed and focus on ourselves rather than what other people are doing.
That's Sam Kerr. And just a reminder, the Matildas are playing England tomorrow morning at 5 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. It certainly is one not to miss, Josh.
Set your alarms right now, because it's going to be an absolutely cracking encounter, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the Matildas in action against high-quality European opposition once more. But we must leave it there tonight, Louise. Thank you to all of our listeners who've not only joined us tonight, but during our first full year of operation here at FNR, Football Nation Radio. It is our first birthday. It's been a fantastic year, and we hope to have you along for many, many years in the future. Louise, thanks for your company.
Thanks, Josh.
And listener, thank you so much for joining us. We will be back at the same time tomorrow night. This has been Evenings on FNR. Bye for now.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.